Well, we've had our break. let's get going. And
Mr. Chair, if I could, just for a second, because it may be helpful for people to know, but Bob Owen and Howard Bailey and their staffs immediately were on that. And Howard, you may have some thoughts, but Bob, if you would share what we've learned here.
It was, we were still looking, but it appears to be a false alarm. It came from our raised floor in our third floor computer room, which you never hope there's a fire anywhere. We especially don't hope that there's a fire in our data center. So anyways, it looked like it was a false alarm. So.
And that's the room where our campus servers are located?
That's the room where campus servers are located. It is a locked room, a secure room. So secure that they were about ready to chop the door in. They sure it wasn't on fire. So they didn't do that. But
thank you, sir.
Anything else, Howard?
I would just add that that it seemed like that it was activated due to dust. I think we don't have any malicious behavior occurring, and it was just the system did what it was supposed to do.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let us proceed.
Before you go on, what I'd like to say is that we have discussed at length this action in our committee, and because of the time and the time that we've lost, we ask that we really can go ahead and ask for the vote, because Kevin, we've discussed this quite
right.
a bit, and you're on record already, you know, with your thoughts and ideas, so
right.
we want to go ahead with the vote.
I was just going to add that I have a personal concern about calling Colonial Courts a problem space. There are disproportionately students who are represented in press releases that go on our website live there.
That's all I have to say. Okay, so we're going to call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed?
Nay. No.
Okay, just noted that we did have opposition. Okay, we can move on to the next item. Trying to get everything back together here now. Approval of faculty emeritus appointments. And we are requesting approval of the faculty emeritus status for the recommended individuals. And Dr. Burch, if you want to go over them, or we can just
leave them for your reading unless you have a particular question.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made and approved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we can move right along here. Approval of clinical rank. And this is asking approval of the new clinical practitioner rank, for College of Health and Human Services only.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion carries. And finally, on the action item, the approval of MS in instructional design. And we're asking for the approval of a new Master of Science program in instructional design offered through the College of Education and Behavioral
Science. Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. And we have some informational items. And Dr. Birch?
Yes, thank you. And Mr. Zelke, you will approve this even without a motion. You will be very happy to know what we're going to say about enrollment reports. So thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to ask Dr. Kaler, our Associate VP for Enrollment Management, to make what is an exciting final report on enrollment.
Well, good morning. It is a pleasure again to be here. This is official numbers, and so we did do a drop for non-payment, and that occurred, and then we did an official snapshot, which we are using for our census data, that occurred Tuesday morning at 6 a.m., and so the numbers that you have here are the official fall enrollment. I believe each of you have this report in your packet, and on the front page, if you'll notice on the left-hand side, a graph that indicates that the enrollment is, total enrollment is 20,712, and you can see that if you go down the total enrollment, The growth from last year was an increase of 951 students, or a 4.8% increase in our total enrollment at WKU. If you want to look at some of the breakdowns, ethnicity, we've also grown in several areas. African-American population has grown by 263 students over last year for almost a 14% growth. If you look over on the right-hand side, our undergraduate and graduate growth, you can see that undergraduates grew by 679 students for a 4% increase. Graduate numbers grew significantly with a 272 student increase, or a 9.7% increase. And Dr. Richard Bowker is here also if you have any questions about graduate enrollment. If you look at the first-time, first-year students, you can see that we are up also there by 84 students over last fall, and that's a 2.5% increase. If you flip the report over, you can see that our profile of the students that we have enrolled really has not significantly changed, even though we have grown significantly. You can see that the average ACT continues to be at 21. Our average high school GPA dropped just ever so slightly there. I'm not concerned about that. I don't think that that's going to be a significant value. If you look at the top enrollment for undergraduate majors, you can see that our top program enrollment still remains fairly consistent there. On the right-hand side, international student enrollment grew by 7 students over last year for a 1.2% increase in enrollment. So that's the enrollment report. Very, very briefly, I'm actually just absolutely delighted, as Dr. Birch has said before, to be Associate VP for Enrollment Management and be able to deliver a report like this to this board is a pleasure. I don't ever want to have to bring any other news to you other than that. So, but that comes as a result of work across the campus from a lot of folks on this campus, graduate and undergraduate, faculty, staff, even our students. Kevin Smiley, even our students contribute to this recruitment effort and this retention effort, and I appreciate everybody on this campus who has helped with this. So, any questions that you have?
Let me mention one of the things that I think gives us great confidence. Yes, we're up in all of the traditional enrollment categories, and specifically first time, first year, which includes summer, 2.5%. But if you look down the category on that right-hand column on the front side page, sophomore, junior, senior, that means retention. That means that we have a significant number of a significant increase in the number of students coming back over previous years, and that is due to a lot of efforts across our campus. But a significant portion of this growth is simply retaining more students, which means more students will be graduating, which means higher degree productivity. That's a measure of success that's been a priority not only for us, but it's a priority for our Commonwealth. And we are being pressed by elected officials in Frankfort to drive up our degree productivity. If we accept them, we have a responsibility to do everything we can to graduate them. And that's a most encouraging statistic on this report. We're obviously growing more than most with the traditional first-time, full-time students, but we're really growing because of our efforts in retention, and I commend everybody involved.
Thank you, Dean. This is a glowing report, and it's really one that we can be proud of. I think it ranks us, what, first in the state in new enrollment?
By a long shot, as far as growth.
Yes, by a long shot. So
that's been the case for 12 straight years.
Yeah. And it's good to see, too, that we are attracting students across, everybody, all nationalities, all ethnicities. Yeah.
You know, I might also add that this puts a lot of pressure on our campus community. And without going into a lot of detail, we are in a position where we've become accustomed to growth. And I must say that in the absence of growth, our problems would be compounded manyfold. At least a greater capacity puts us in a position to be able to have some options on some things. But if we were stagnant or in decline, coupled with declining state appropriations, coupled with significant limits on our ability to raise tuition politically and pragmatically, we would have a very difficult combination of negative circumstances. So this gives us encouragement. Now we have to be sure that we hold the discipline to dedicate the revenue that more students paying tuition generates for the university. And in that regard, Dr. Birch, about 2 weeks ago, working with Ann Mead, our Vice President for Finance, has $1.2 million for new faculty positions and added class sections with which to work beginning this year to address the primary pressure point for this growth. And the balance will be held in reserve with the unknown of the General Assembly coming up next spring and hopefully be available for broader faculty staff compensation. But we have to hold some discipline to be able to invest back in those academic pressure points that are having to cover that growth in primarily in the classroom. And it does affect other elements of the university too, including a lot of our student services, regional campuses. List is quite long. So it's a complex profile, but the data is most encouraging and gives us options.
Just one or two very quick comments. One of the things that's embedded in an enrollment growth report is part of what Dr. Kaler mentioned, the retention piece that's embedded in it. And I think that one of the things that you'll find on this campus, there's not a department, there's not a college, there's not a unit that hasn't instituted one or more ways of directing additional attention to student success, recognizing they need to do things that are going to give that added opportunity for students. Our faculty have been just wonderful about instituting different delivery methods, ways that students can access our programs, both off campus, out of our backyard area, through our electronic means, other means. So this is across the board, and not to let it pass what Dr. Kaler mentioned, and that is that we topped 3,000 in our graduate enrollment for the first time, Dr. Falker. So we had our own private celebration about that one, but lots of people doing it.
And I think too, across the board, the programs that we offer and the care that we take with our students, I think, is the thing that adds to the retention as well. But then that word gets out to the others, and it makes more people want to come to WKU because they're satisfied with the experiences that they've been having. So we'll move on to Chinese flagship designation.
You bet. Amy, where are you? Amy Eichardt, come on up here. Some of you may have met Amy already, but we're pleased to do a brief presentation on the Chinese flagship program. I mentioned this earlier today because it's one of the first examples of the kinds of opportunities we're having to add that international dimension to this campus. It's an extraordinary program and one that not many campuses have, as you learned last time. But we realized we probably didn't tell you exactly what it was and about it, and Amy might tell you it's the first of what she hopes will be many flagship programs we bring. So, Amy Eichardt.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Birch, and thank you for allowing me to meet with you and present a little bit about the flagship program. I'm not quite sure what you already know, so forgive me if some of this is repetition. I'll try to Well, the flagship is a national program. It's funded by the Department of Defense through their National Security Education Program. It was started about 9 years ago. In total, they spent about $136 million on the program, half of which has been spent on Chinese alone. So Chinese is the priority language. There are 25 domestic flagship centers and programs and 3 K-12 in flagship program. There are 11 overseas centers which work with the domestic flagship centers. There are 9 different languages, and like I said, Chinese is half of the money has been spent on Chinese, and then the next is Arabic, and then the rest share about 5% of the funding. Of the nine domestic Chinese flagship programs, we are one of nine. We were funded in this last year's competition, and our partner school was the University of Oregon. There were only two new flagship programs funded in the entire competition, WKU and San Francisco State University. Those of you who are not familiar with San Francisco State University, probably has one of the largest Chinese programs. They have a very large heritage population. So as you can probably guess, WKU doesn't really fit in with these schools in terms of what we have here. We did not have an established Chinese program. We did not have a large pool of heritage students to draw on. So I think that begs the question, why Kentucky? Why Chinese? Why WKU? Part of the reason was that Chinese is actually very important to Kentucky. China is Kentucky's eighth largest trading partner. The governor was recently in Kentucky. There are over 40 high schools that are teaching, 40 high schools and elementary schools that are teaching Chinese in Kentucky right now. So there is sort of a grassroots interest in Chinese. Up until this past year, there wasn't a university that was really able to meet the continuing education needs of those students. With close to 90% of our students staying in-state to go to university, we really needed an in-state option for these students to continue their Chinese language education. And this, coupled with incredible institutional support, is what made the national flagship, language flagship group select WKU to be part of this very elite group of schools. The flagship program at WKU, its academic home, is in University College. And this was done because the flagship program is very different. It is unlike a traditional academic department. And also, it was recognized that we were going to need to do things very quickly, innovate, and do things that had never been done before. Between now and the next year and a half, we will be proposing and hopefully getting approved 3 more years of Chinese language. That's a lot of coursework to get through. And so situating it in the University College allows us to do that in the most efficient way. The administrative home is my office, the Office of Scholar Development, and it's a not a conventional situation, but as the person that pushed this through, it's my job now to make sure it's realized. We are also affiliated very closely with the Honors College. We share recruiting. All flagship students are also honor students. Students who take flagship classes, those credits count toward the Honors College. This was another piece of the proposal that the funders found very attractive, the idea of embedding the flagship program institutionally within the university and therefore ensuring sustainability. We have both an administrative director, myself, and an academic director. The academic director is Dr. Li-Ping Chen. She started this fall and came to us from the University of Pittsburgh, which has a very established Chinese program. We were very lucky to get her. So, as I said, in the next year and a half, we have a lot of curriculum to get through. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of an update on kind of what's happening with the curriculum. That is pretty much the core of what our responsibility is for the next 2 years. We'll be working on a new designation, which is CHNF, which is Chinese flagship. It will be the only one of the flagships that has their own designation for the course. And again, this is important in terms of creating identity and sort of an institutional stability for the program. 4 years of Chinese will be in place by spring 2011. Next fall, 3 years will be offered, and we will have students ready and in all of those courses. So that's a pretty extraordinary achievement, considering that we found out we were funded in April, and the first class started August 29th or whenever the class started. There will be an additional 21 classes that we will be developing and offering, including 5 what we call language riders. These classes are not necessarily Chinese classes, but they're classes that faculty from across the university are developing to support the language program. These will be like the geography of Asia, sociology of Asia, history of modern Asia, so area studies courses that will support These will also support and enhance, I think, proposed tiny Asian studies major, which the religious studies program department is developing. So our program that we proposed is a four-year intensive curriculum with multiple study abroad experiences, and a followed by a capstone year at Nanjing University. I'm not sure if any of you saw this. It was reported that China is now creating their own Ivy League, and they've designated 9 schools to be part of their Ivies. And Nanjing University is one of the Ivies that they've designated. It's also currently ranked as the top school in China. So our students will be spending a year at Nanjing. They will be taking classes with Chinese students from Chinese professors, and then interning in a Chinese business. So it combines academic and professional development. So what a typical semester looks like for a flagship student. We have the students who decide to commit to this are making a substantial commitment to the program, to learning language. And in return, we're making a substantial financial commitment to them to support their study and their study abroad. Chinese Flagship 101 meets for 3 hours per week, and that is where all the new material is learned. They also have a second section that's required. It's called, it's what we call a drill class, and that also meets 3 hours per week, and that's to reinforce and practice material that's learned. So it's a bit like athletics. You know, you can't just go and play the game on Saturday. You have to practice throughout the day. So the idea is that we need to provide structured practice for the students. They also are required to go to the language lab for 2 hours per week, and then they have one-on-one conversation with a language tutor for 15 to 30 minutes per week. And then on their own, they're spending, told the students, they're spending about 5 hours minimum per week. That comes to about 13 hours per week that they're devoting to Chinese. Some of the students are closer to 20 hours. So as you can see, this is really the winter language practicum is a unique piece of our curriculum. It is takes advantage of our winter session, and we send students for 4 weeks to China. They will be missing New Year's in the U.S. Instead, they'll be spending New Year's in China. And the philosophy behind this is that we really, twofold. One is we really wanted to give the students an opportunity to use the language to really cement what they've learned, and also give them a first experience in China that was not an entire year. Because many of the students that we're dealing with have never left the United States, and so sending them abroad the first time to Nanjing for an entire year, that could really be too much of a change. And so this, these shorter-term experiences will help prepare them for their one-year experience. And then the second reason is that it also provides an opportunity for the students to basically be rewarded for the effort that they've put in, and then prepare for the following semester. Currently, we have 16 flagship students. They come from diverse majors in all of the colleges. 8 of the students are from the Gatton Academy of Math and Sciences. And they also have very diverse backgrounds and ethnicities. So the flagship program is pulling from across the university, and there's no one major that's overly represented. So very quickly, I just want to share with you a little bit about how flagship is different than a traditional language class that you might have learned. First of all, it's outcomes-based. What that means is that the flagship doesn't really care how many hours you're in the classroom. What they're interested in is what you come out with. What is your proficiency at the end of the day? So we are teaching toward a proficiency. We're not teaching toward credit hours. So when we develop the curriculum, it's a backward process where we look at the goal of where they need to be. And so, for example, superior level. In order to be a superior level in Chinese, you need to know 2,500 characters, Chinese characters. So working backward, that means that our students need to learn 600 to 700 characters per year. The typical Chinese classroom, students will learn 200 to 300. So they need to learn over twice as many characters per year than other students. The superior level is also called level 3. It means that professionally you are completely competent in that language. Whatever you're doing in English, you could also do it in Chinese. If you're an engineer, if you're a businessman, if your professor, if you're doing chemistry research, we can send you over to China and you can do everything in Chinese that you can do in the U.S. It is not a major. And the reason it is not a major is because we are not training people, we're not training specialists in language. We're training engineers, we're training scientists, we're training business people. But we want them to be engineers and scientists and business people who also speak Chinese. So it is deliberately designed to not be a major. I'll just give you sort of a quick outline of some of the differences in the flagship versus non-flagship program. WKU, their traditional Chinese class, and also the University of Pittsburgh, which has an intensive program, but it's not a flagship program. So as you can see, we're moving a lot faster, we're doing a lot more, but actually our contact hours are less than the University of Pittsburgh. I just want to show you very quickly, in conclusion, some of the work that the students have produced less than 2 months into this program. It's really quite impressive. So every week they're required to do what are kanji sheets so that they can practice writing all of the advances. This is from September 25th, so it's about a month into the program. And this is an essay that they were required to write as homework already. It's pretty impressive, 1 month in, that they can write an entire paragraph like that. This is a unit one test. What I'd like to point out is not only are they answering in characters, they're also reading the questions in characters. And so that is a very high level of command of the characters. It's not just recognition, they have to actually produce it. Most Chinese classes don't get into characters like this until the second or third year, and they rely on the pinyin, which is the English, which is written in Latin letters, and it's a phonetic system of writing. And this is a dictation. So this was a dictation where the teacher dictated something and the student wrote it down in characters. And so that really represent the highest level of mastery of the characters. And as you can see, they got 100%. So currently, one of the other factors that we're doing, and we will be testing all of the students, so we will be able to provide national benchmarks. We will be using LingoFolio, STAMP, the simulated oral proficiency interview, and then at the end of the year, also the oral proficiency interview. Right now, our students are all self-reporting at the novice mid level. And based on simulated oral proficiency interviews that Dr. Chen conducted, they're mostly into novice mid. That's pretty extraordinary, because most students who have had 3 years of a language such as Spanish or French in high school graduate with a novice high. So our students, after 2 months, are almost at the level that a high school graduate in Chinese, in French, Spanish, or German would be at. So it's really quite incredible how quickly they're moving through. I think I'm going to stop there, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
But your question has to be in Chinese.
Mine's in pinyin. So
on that the score that the student made 100, was the delivery in Chinese or was it in English?
Yes, it was dictated in Chinese, and they had to take Chinese has three types of, I guess there's a character, and the character is the meaning of the word. However, the character is unrelated to the pronunciation. Pronunciation is separate, so that's where just because a student hears it, they have to actually visually know. It's a pictographic language, and so they have to know what the character looks like in addition to knowing what that sound translates to a meaning of a certain word.
That's a bit fascinating.
That's my favorite.
Is this Mandarin or is it the other type of Chinese?
It is Mandarin. We teach Mandarin Chinese with simplified characters.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, the Department of Defense, it's the reason they're investing these kinds of resources is very simple. The more we understand, can speak and write and communicate in any medium a given language, the better our relations are going to be with the people of that language. And the more we can speak and write and communicate in Arabic or Chinese, you saw Swahili up there, and if you think 50 years from now, the African nations are going to be very significant in the culture of this and every other country on the globe. So this is what we're talking about with international reach, and we're going to compete with the very best institutions in American higher education to pursue opportunities like this, and this is what our students are beginning to be about. And it's a major step pragmatically, but it's a major step symbolically and philosophically for us as we internationalize this experience. And stay tuned, because we're working on some other initiatives that are even more significant. So they're just great work, Amy, to all of your team. And this is something that I knew you would value learning more about.
So we thank you for the information item. Very informative, and appreciate it all. And that brings to close the academic affairs agenda. So
thank you so much for that. We now go to Finance and Budget Committee, Mr. David Porter. Carry on, David.
Thank you. I would direct your attention to page 16, action item.